From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott. Nearly a quarter of Americans admit that they have shared fake political news stories online, and that's according to the Pew Research Center. So why do so many of us fall for fake news and then pass it along, even if we may suspect it is untrue? And how do we figure out what is real? Part of the solution is checking the facts. Daniel Funke reports on global fact-checking efforts for the Poynter Institute, and he's joining us on the line from St. Petersburg, Florida. Good morning, Daniel.
Hi, good morning. Thanks so much for having me.
And we've also been speaking with Bart Wojdynski. He's an assistant journalism professor at the University of Georgia. And Bart, I do want to start with you after having talked with Francesca. Listening to how people actually may not necessarily be seeking out fake news, but you've researched how people determine whether or not what they're reading is credible. So how can they make that judgment?
Yeah, it's really interesting because I think news consumers on their own have ideas of what they look for when they're looking at an article and trying to figure out if it's credible. So we've done some research where we sort of ask people what they think they look at, and everybody says, oh, I definitely look at the source. I look at the URL in my browser to make sure it's credible. I look at the byline and timestamp. But then when we've taken different groups of people and brought them in and showed them different articles, some of which were published by reputable sources, some of which were from more kind of fringe sources, had incorrect information, that kind of stuff, it turns out that people don't actually look at the things they say they do very often.
So they're reporting that they're a little more vigilant about it than they may be in real life.
Yeah, it may be a little bit of Lake Wobegon syndrome. Everybody thinks they're a little above average in scrutinizing information, but we've done some studies where we found that fewer than 20% of people ever look for or look at the byline, look at a timestamp. Fewer than 30%, I think, looked at headlines on the story. So this was in a case where they clicked on an article from a social media post. So by the time they've loaded the article from the social media page, they're ready to dive in and start reading. And they actually don't look at that peripheral information that may be giving them clues as to whether it's a reputable source or it's timely or any of these other things.
Now, Daniel, fact-checking has always been a critical part of news operations, but you report on fact-checking and global misinformation. Is misinformation the same thing as fake news?
Yeah, so misinformation is a broader category that encompasses fake news. Fake news, in the traditional sense, is any kind of story, meme, video that is fabricated with the goal of tricking people to make some kind of profit, primarily through advertising revenue. And misinformation is, you can think of it as almost like a bucket that fake news sits in. And within that are also fake videos, fake social media posts, any kind of like hoax you can think of sits in the bucket of fake news
and
or
you've,
misinformation.
You've interviewed a few self-identified online trolls who actually write fake news stories. So what have they told you about their motivations for doing this? You mentioned advertising, which is dollars, but how about ideology?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think something that a lot of people don't understand about fake news writers is that they don't necessarily see themselves in the way that the public does. So there's one really infamous hoaxer in Maine who is the subject of a lot of Snopes fact checks, who considers himself a satirist. And in conversations on Facebook, we've talked about how his goal is actually to publish fake stuff with the goal of getting conservative-leaning users to share it, thereby making them look dumb and thereby trolling them. So he, in his mind, he's a liberal, and he's trying to show everyone how dumb conservatives are by tricking them into sharing his satirical stories. But he doesn't really see himself as a misinformation purveyor, and that's pretty typical for the one-man fake news operations I've seen.
Well, Snopes is one of the organizations, along with the AP, PolitiFact, other fact-checking organizations that are now working with Facebook to try and check some of these stories. This is something that Facebook announced, that they're partnering with these organizations to help prevent the spread of fake news. How does that work?
Yeah, so we're about a little more than a year and a half into this program, and it came about after the 2016 election when fact-checkers were fed up with Facebook's lack of attention that they are paying to fake news on the platform. So basically, they partnered with the project that I work for, the International Fact-Checking Network at the Poynter Institute, and members of our code of principles are allowed to participate in this program. Our code stipulates things like you must list your sources, you must list your authors, all that kind of good stuff to make sure that fact-checking organizations are up to snuff. And the program lets these fact-checking organizations see what users have reported on the platform, what's going viral, and they will check those stories to see if they're true or not. And if they debunk them, then Facebook automatically lowers those stories in the newsfeed, and their reach will decrease by up to 80%. So essentially, people won't see stories stories that fact checkers have debunked as false.
Well, is it working? I mean, it's not as if every overstatement by a politician or a pundit may not be technically true is going to be lowered in the newsfeed, is it? I mean, would that be editorial?
Yeah, so I think there's two things there, right? So the first is that we would love to know how this program is going. Facebook is very infamously guarded about its data and its proprietary algorithms. So they haven't been really forthcoming with, you know, how much this is actually decreasing the level of misinformation that people are seeing. But in, you know, conversations with fact checkers like PolitiFact, they tell me that this has really helped them scale up their work by actually showing them what people are seeing in terms of misinformation, whereas before they relied on mostly reader emails to determine what to fact check. So they see it as a success, but we would love to see some concrete data, because I think if you think about it, it's way easier to create a fake news story and get a lot of reach on Facebook than it is to do a time-consuming fact check. So that's a real challenge that fact checkers are faced with, is how do we combat this huge problem where, you know, fake news websites often copy each other too, to broaden their reach, whereas fact checkers have to work like on a one fact check for almost an entire day to make sure that they have the right sources, the right wording, all that kind of stuff. So there's both those problems there.
And Bart, you've done some research on this, how people actually do change their behavior when they're taught how to identify fake news. What did you find?
Yeah, we've done some recent studies with a couple of grad students of mine, Brittany Jefferson and Matt Binford, where we've taken some of the people that come into the study and we've given them a little bit of a warning or just a reminder that misinformation is out there. In our case, we weren't even looking at the political stuff, but more the science information. There's a lot of sort of anti-globalist, whether it's anti-GMO or anti-climate change, kind of conspiracy science fake news, which is sort of that's where this stuff was really going on prior to the 2016 election. And so we've just reminded some people, hey, just so you know, here's the volume of fake science news that was shared last year. Other people didn't get the warning. And people who did get the warning were much more likely to correctly identify out of the articles they looked at next, which ones were fake. Now, they were more vigilant about all the articles. I think they were more skeptical. So we showed them a couple of legitimate articles, and they were a little more skeptical there. But the only ones where there was a significant difference was the fake ones. So they were actually more likely to look at the clues on the design page or the URL or the source of the information and actually, you know, take a second to think, wait, is this a source I've heard of? Do I know anything about this? Actually, this might be fake. Whereas if they're not thinking about fake news, that doesn't necessarily happen.
So, Daniel, Facebook is changing its strategy to downplay this fact check label. I'm wondering how people react to seeing a disclaimer or seeing that something was disproven in the articles that they're reading and think they're not legit.
Yeah, so that's actually an interesting case of how Facebook is responding to relevant academic research on this problem. So basically, they changed that feature, I believe it was in December, and it used to say disputed when a fact checker debunked a story and someone by chance saw the story on the platform. But some research found that users didn't respond very well to that label. When someone saw that something was debunked and the story aligned with their political ideology, they were continuing to double down and read that story. But so this study, I think it was at a Northeastern university, found that if you just list the fact check and some relevant objective news stories in the related article section right below the story on Facebook, it's more likely to discourage someone from clicking on that story and sharing that story, and more likely to encourage them to actually read the fact check and the facts about that story.
So, Bart, given your research, just put a fancy image there of a puppy and people will go for that anyway?
Yeah, I mean, I do think that, yeah, that's puppies and cats are probably going to draw people's attention. But I think, I think with that change, the stuff that Daniel's talking about, one of the things they found was that, like I said, the disputed label can be kind of an ideological trigger that helps people kind of consume information in a motivated way, right? I think if you hold a belief that you feel like a lot of other people don't, or that's challenged, and you see something that validates it, that's the stuff that people, you know, at either end of the political spectrum get really pulled into. Where it's like, oh, wait, I hold this view that's not very common, but look, here's something that validates it. Oh, and look, other people are disputing it. That gives them a kind of real motivation to dive in, read the article, and then, you know, later on, they might not even remember whether they read it from a credible source or not, but they'll remember the information.
Well, Bart, we have to leave it there. Bart Wodinski, he is assistant professor of journalism at UGA. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Daniel Funke, he is a fact-checking reporter at the Poynter Institute. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much for having me.